Welcome back to TYT. Anna Kasparian, Ida Rodriguez, and Brett Ehrlich with you. See, Brett, that's how you do an intro.
That was way better. The first hour, I just didn't do anything.
It came okay, in. It's okay.
And then I looked at Anna and was like, I should be talking now, huh? Hi, everybody.
Hey, guys. All right. I do want to read some tweets because they're awesome. Carl Peterson said, but Trump's wall is going to stop all the drug trafficking in response to the story we did about the cocaine smugglers. By the way, like, look, no judgment if cocaine is your drug of choice, I guess. But I don't understand cocaine.
Like, you don't.
I don't.
You understand. Already feel interesting. The reason for cocaine is to feel like you're so interesting.
But it lasts like 10 minutes, right?
I don't know. I don't know if I've ever done cocaine.
I've never done cocaine. I've never saw the appeal of it.
I never saw it until I was like 25.
Yeah, I'm scared of it. You know what? I get offered cocaine all the time now. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's amazing. I thought cocaine was like from the 80s or 90s. Like, people still do cocaine.
Like the people in the, especially like some comics, they do coke. And then, you know, the weirdest thing is because I remember my uncle saying it when I was little, like, you want a bump? And I'm like, isn't that like 70s?
Yeah, here. I feel like on the key I got out of the fishbowl from this swingers party.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never tried it. I'm scared. I come from addicts, so I'm afraid that if I try.
That you'll love it.
I'm hooked. Then, yeah.
I saw a video that may or may not have been fake about how they make cocaine. Mm. And it was just like you take a bunch of coca leaves and then you just start pouring like ammonia in it and like alcohol in it. And then you burn it and then you stomp
That's
it.
How you make it?
And it's just like. Gasoline. It's like all that extra stuff. So
I thought they made it in New Mexico in like a trailer.
That's meth.
Oh, that's meth.
That's crystal meth. That's Heisenberg.
The Heisenberg. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. One more tweet. Kiki Wellington says they weren't smuggling. They were carrying pain relief for when the flight attendant punches them in the face and drags them off.
What a terrible thing. Like, you have to be afraid of that now. Like, maybe you're just a flight attendant might punch you and it's really good padding.
Yeah.
But then you get caught for.
I hate flying. I despise it.
It's to fly tomorrow.
Ugh.
So.
Oy.
All right, guys. Let's do some stories. We have an update to the whole United debacle, and it's actually pretty good news. United Airlines has officially settled with Dr. David Dow. He is the man who was dragged off a United flight because he was unwilling to give up his seat on an overcrowded, overbooked flight. Now, we don't know what the details of the settlement are, but we do know that his lawyer, Dr. Dow's lawyer, is very much happy with whatever the settlement is. He says Mr. Munoz, who is the CEO of United, said he was going to do the right thing, and he has. In addition, United has taken full responsibility for what happened without attempting to blame others, including the city of Chicago. Now, when the story first unfolded, of course, there was a lot of blame placed on everyone else other than United by the CEO of United. And then when he realized that wasn't going to fly with people, he kind of became a little more apologetic about the incident. Now, United Airlines has pledged new protections for its consumers, clients, whatever, its passengers. And so I want to give you the details on that. Now, the airline announced 10 new or updated customer service policies aimed at preventing episodes such as the one that occurred on that flight and released an action report on how the events on that ill-fated flight unfolded. United said that starting Friday of this week, employees will be able to offer up to $10,000 to try to entice overbooked passengers to take different flights. United also said it would reduce overbooking. So let me just elaborate a little more on how they plan to overbook less. They want to like focus on the flights where people are usually the least likely to give up their seats, and they'll be better about not overbooking those flights. At least that's what they say. But they don't really get into specifics in terms of numbers and all that. And also, the whole thing about employees being able to offer up to $10,000, wasn't that already part of the law?
No, it wasn't in the policy. It seemed like it topped out at like $800 or so, or $1,000. This saying it explicitly, I mean, maybe it will eventually drive up the price of what people are willing to expect, knowing that there is an upper boundary. Because before they had said, let's just go up, and then we'll hit a top of like $1,000, and then we're going to ask people to get off the plane.
I've never seen them go over 1,000. What I will say is I'm flying United tomorrow, right? And I was on a flight and I noticed that I didn't have a seat on the second leg of my flight. So I went in to try to get a seat and all the seats that were available were for sale. Yeah. There were no free seats available after I already purchased this ticket. So I think that people are just tired of getting hustled.
Like, that's absolutely right.
It's just they're tired of getting hustled.
It's the one, I don't know if it's the one and only, but it's one of the few things out there where you will be a paying customer. You will pay for your ticket in full and you're not guaranteed that flight. And that's crazy,
right?
Especially
so
considering how expensive it is.
If I went on StubHub and I ordered a seat at a basketball game, mm-hmm. the playoffs say, and I showed up and someone else was there and they were like, sorry, we'll have to reaccommodate you for a later game.
Right.
You would say, no, that seems to me to be fraud. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a lawyer about how you would go about building a case against United mm-hmm. on behalf of all the people who've been displaced by overbooking, which seems to be like fraud. She said that the problem was so many people end up taking the money that that's like a done deal. Mm-hmm. And you have to then find people who'd been picked up and taken off the plane as a result of overbooking and where no one was willing to give up their seats. And that's just a harder class to find.
Yeah, but you know what? It's just gotten downright disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, they took the food off the planes. Now you got to pay for everything. You even have to pay to be a hero on the airplane because you got to pay to sit in the emergency aisle. And that is like you're paying to save people's lives. Like, yeah, come on, son. That's just like ridiculous. Like,
you know that's not why people do it. They're like extra leg room.
I know.
And then they're like willing and able to assist in case of emergency. And you're just like, oh, crap.
$123 now. It's not. It used to be like $29.
Really?
It's like gone over $100.
So with the increase in automation, all the airlines have been able to more accurately figure out what seats aren't going to be filled. Like how many people are going to miss those flights. And that's how much they overbook by. But they did say that in this new system, they're not going to overbook as much on, say, the last flight of the day because a lot of people miss that first flight.
Yeah.
And then they get bumped throughout the day. And who knows by the end of the day.
I don't care how many people miss the flight. I don't care if mm-hmm. they have sold a ticket for a flight and literally no one, they have sold every ticket for a specific flight and no one for that flight shows up. I don't care. I don't care because guess what? They already paid for that ticket and you guys aren't going to refund them. Getting a refund, I could be dying of cancer. I could find out that I have cancer right now. Stage 4 cancer and I have like 1 week left to live and I have a flight planned for tomorrow, they will not give you a refund. They'll be like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, they don't. And when even with the insurance, it's also a hustle.
It is a hustle, yes.
You have to provide a doctor's note. So I know that you United people are like, yes, I'm so glad that American flight attendant almost busted that lady in the head with that stroller. Yes, he wanted to fight a passenger. It's take some of the heat off of us.
It's become, we have less options in terms of, you know, airlines to fly with. And they get to treat us however they want because there isn't enough competition in that world.
Well,
right now.
There's still FAA regulations. I will say I've
so
talked to
strict.
I've talked to flight attendants lately who say like people are becoming monsters on the plane because they want their. I saw someone say that it's essentially like who wants to be the next airplane millionaire. Mm-hmm. This guy David Dow got a lot of money. They're not going to talk about how much, but I'm sure he got a lot of money.
Yeah, they broke his nose and he lost teeth. Like, but the other thing is let's not disregard the fact that these flight attendants have become emboldened. And since 9/11, they're just you can say one thing that will piss a flight attendant off. I watch them, mm-hmm. and it's like all right, you can get off the plane. It's like the tolerance and the customer service. I flew United last week. They were so nice. The people were like, thank you so much. You can tell it was like overcompensating.
I know a lot of flight attendants and there are really great flight attendants and just like any job, there are the ones who are like, oh my God, I'm flying with this person today. Yeah. And that happens. And the ones who end up confronting folks and making people angry are the ones who are like, oh my God. But then again, like it is such a difficult job to have, especially after 9/11. Like that fear of dying is pretty rough if you're always getting in the plane. Well, and I do totally hear that some folks just like say, all right, I feel threatened or whatever it is. And there's a danger that when they say they are only going to use force to bring people out of the plane mm-hmm. in the case of safety and security, well, then you only need to get it to the point where you provoke someone into being a safety and security threat, and then you can get them off.
Well, right. You leave a lot to interpretation, because United was the airline that had the problem with the leggings, right?
Yes.
So it's just like that one flight attendant says you're a threat. That one flight attendant says you're dressed inappropriately. Some people just don't know how to handle power. And I think if that's such a stressful job and you know what the risks are working there, then go work at Chuck E. Cheese.
It is also a schlep and a half to get someone off the plane and get their bags off the plane. Mm-hmm. You would rather have everyone in there and just shut the door and let's get going, because all those people have to get home.
Yeah. And look, one other thing that they said that they will avoid doing moving forward is if someone has already boarded the plane, they will not kick that person off.
Right.
Unless they are a safety risk. Now, that's a policy that should have existed before this whole debacle, but they've decided that, hey, maybe now it's time to kind of switch things around because we're getting so much negative press attention.
Yeah.
But either way, just because you guys, the big airlines, have been able to buy out the smaller airlines and we have less competition and less options, doesn't mean that you get to treat paying customers like they're garbage. And that's what keeps happening time and time again, not just by United, but by a lot of the major airline companies. Look, the only time I haven't had a problem, and hopefully I never do have a problem because I love them, is JetBlue. They're not a sponsor. This is not an advertisement. I've always had a good experience on JetBlue.
Yeah, I like JetBlue.
Southwest too, because you get your refund. You can use your money.
Yeah, but then you have to like look around and see like what seat am I getting? Are you gonna jump in front of me?
Sometimes
Yeah, I don't like that. I hate that. Like, because we're savages, man. Yeah. Like we're like civilized sometimes, but at the end of the day, we're animals like fighting for survival. And you see how animal-like we are as humans at an airport. At an airport, as soon as that person picks up that microphone and says that they're about to start boarding, everyone's like,
yeah. Right. And I will say another thing.
Why are you standing in line, bro? Why are you standing in line? You're not going to move for like another hour. Why are you standing in line? And your luggage is too big. Yeah. Your luggage is too big.
She's standing up. She got up off her seat.
It just makes me crazy.
Well, I fly every week because I have to for comedy. Right. But I'll tell you, with Southwest, I don't like the seating arrangements. But I like the fact that I don't have to pay extra for my bags because I can travel with my merchandise. The flight attendants tend to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And when I can't make the flight, I can always use that money and get, you know, I can appropriate it for another flight as opposed to this $200 extra charge and a price in fare.
I will say the reason that Southwest has been able to do that is because they essentially hedged gas prices. Mm-hmm. So they bought back when the gas prices were super high. Yeah. They had already scheduled out the purchase of their prices of their gas ahead of time. So they were paying a much lower price for gas. So they were able to keep a lot of their prices lower.
You know what I like? I like people who plan ahead.
Right.
That's what but I like.
Listen, there's a lot of stuff to be said. Also, just the last point about flight attendants on airlines like the one that you saw in the United commuter flight from whatever it was, Chicago to Louisville. Like, those aren't necessarily like United flight attendants. Mm-hmm. Those are Air Republic or whatever the name of that subsidiary, that small airline that got bought was. And I've talked to tons of flight attendants who have been absorbed by major airlines who get screwed. Mm-hmm. By the new union that they have to sign up for. And there was one woman who like wanted to buy a house. And she's like, maybe now after the purchase and my lack of whatever pension that I had to give up, now I'll just buy a tiny house maybe.
Yeah.
And she like, they swoop in and they take your benefits and then you're kind of screwed. So maybe you are cranky and you do want to get back to Louisville.
I mean, that's everybody though, right? The writers are about to strike. Everybody's like,
it's tough times.
Tough times.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to some other news. Researchers at Berkeley looked into the issue of internet speeds and different internet options in various parts of California. And what they found was that AT&T seems to be providing faster speed internet to richer areas. Now, I'm going to break this all down, and there are some weaknesses in this study, so I'll get to that in just a second. But first, here's what their findings indicate. It indicates that at least in California, telecoms company AT&T may only be making fiber internet access available to affluent communities, leaving some low-income areas in California stuck with internet access that can be as slow as 768 kilobits per second, which is, that's insanely slow. I think we know that. So let me go further. The higher average earnings of a specific area, the higher chance there was of it having high-speed internet access. Fiber to the home households had a median income of $110,000, while DSL access homes had a median income of just $47,894. Okay, so this doesn't really surprise me at all, right? Mm-mm. Because of course they're going to prioritize places where they know people can afford fiber optic internet connection, mm-hmm. and you know, faster speeds. And of course, the faster the speed, even if you're paying for DSL, the faster the speed, the more you're paying for it. And so this is a company doing what companies do, and they prioritize areas where they know people are willing to pay for a more expensive service. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, but this is what businesses do.
Yeah, not to mention like different it is a monopoly. When you move into a yes. certain area and you eat and you get, I hate to call them out, but and I've never had to deal with them, but everyone I know who had to deal with Frontier when Frontier swooped in, it was a nightmare. And yeah. maybe it was the growing pains of becoming a new company and having to take over other people's infrastructure. But just those kinds of things where you, what's your alternative? And for a lot of people, the answer was nothing. We'll be there within a 9-hour window in the middle of the day, and you won't have internet. Why? Because we didn't prioritize your neighborhood as one that needed an upgrade, specifically because we have a monopoly over that neighborhood, and what else the hell are you going to do?
So a few years ago, Germany had stated that internet connection is a human right. And it sounds
feels like it.
It sounds crazy if you just hear it real quick and you don't think about it. But think about what your life would be like if you did not have internet connection. Mm-hmm. How many resources would no longer be at your disposal? How much information would be cut away from you and your life? Mm-hmm. It's so important to have access to that internet. And so, look, we can have a conversation about, you know, whether or not it makes sense to criticize AT&T for what they're doing. But I think what's more important is having a conversation about what we can do to make faster speed internet available to everyone, regardless of their socioeconomic status.
Well, I tell you, like, that's such a good point. Because people that are like on Medi-Cal, older people mm-hmm. who they have to log online to go to the website to find out what doctors they can go to. And I'm talking about elderly people. But even though we said we were not going to diss AT&T, this is an AT&T phone. And I'm really sad to know that Sherman Oaks is on the hood list because my service is awful.
No.
My internet is terrible.
Oh, that sucks.
And I get the text messages that say, you've used 75%, so now we're gonna start slowing you down.
Yeah. Oh, you gotta switch to Verizon, girl.
It's gone. I'm
look at this commercial.
Yeah. I know, it's not a commercial, I'm sorry.
You know, you listen to the radio and they're like, this exact conversation, you have to switch to Verizon.
No, because
they have
people,
unlimited.
People make it seem like it's a very superficial thing, but my career, everything is handled via email.
Yeah.
Everything,
okay.
You know.
So you know what's incredible? I have a laptop at home. I never use my laptop anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I use it sometimes if I'm writing an article or a piece or whatever. But now I do all of my work on this smartphone. And so all these things that, you know, quite honestly, a lot of right-wing conservatives smack talk about, like, oh, everyone wants the latest iPhone. It's not just about having a fancy phone. It's mm-hmm. about having access to the world and having opportunities. Like, this phone actually does represent opportunities. If you don't have it or you don't have access to it, you're just not as connected to what's going on as other people. And so the internet, of course, plays a huge role in all of that. And mm-hmm. so, you know, the business model here, of course, is gonna raise a few red flags. But more importantly, what are we doing as a country to ensure that everyone, even those in rural areas of this country, have access to decent speed internet?
Mark Zuckerberg's trying.
He's
He's trying really hard. And I agree. You said that thing about getting access to doctors. I think there's other things that are more important, like adult content on the internet.
Totally.
I mean, I can't stream that. You did know. It's like they're kind of dictating who you can, you know, share a romantic interlude with. And I think
a
romantic interlude by candlelight when your girlfriend's out of town
right.
and there's nothing else to do.
When I hear this stuff about the conservatives talking about this stuff, how else are you going to read that latest super intelligent Tulsa Donald Trump tweet if you don't have a smartphone while you're off?
That's the thing, they probably don't want you
in prayer circle.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's the secret behind it, is they're like, actually, we would prefer you to know.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys, we got to take our first break for the second hour. When we come back, I read your TYT Lives and a really fascinating story about the Secret Service and some of their trials and tribulations in protecting our president. See you when you come back. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. A few TYT lives for you. Sticky Indican says, this isn't good news. United just bought the right to avoid facing a judge. I want justice. So, you know, when you settle out of court, obviously.
What more justice do you, for that guy? That guy got $1 jillion.
I really wonder how much they gave him.
Millions of bucks.
Would you allow a flight attendant to punch you in the face repeatedly? Not repeatedly, 10 times, but really hard, if it meant that you'd get $1 million?
Yes, 100%.
No, but like, what if they break your nose or something?
Whatever, I've got this giant thing anyway. What's it gonna get worse?
I don't. Look at it.
Look at the side view of it. Look at that profile.
My classic response to that is, I've done so much more for less.
Politicat says, oh, of course, I'll accept a voucher to take another chance with you. Like, you know, the voucher to go on another United flight. The Mad Lib says, how does United plan to deal with the fact that they only do common sense things when they get spanked by the court of public opinion?
That's a great one.
I mean, that's what all these companies do. You know?
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. I think these are some good improvements, especially for me, because I fly standby all the time.
I'll tell you what, I think it's hilarious how some people trivialize social media and they're like, oh, Twitter's stupid. They make a difference. Like, that social media, it can go bad, real bad, but it can really apply some pressure to make some change.
And just know, the last few years, those airlines have had record profits, like an insane amount of profits.
And I'll tell you,
don't feel bad for them.
I get more results online than I do when I call. If I have a problem,
if they see your following, then you're done. Like, you get pretty much anything you want. All right, I want to get to some more stories, so let's get to it. The Secret Service is dealing with some obstacles and some challenges when it comes to keeping Donald Trump and his family safe. Now, of course, with Trump and his family, there are some unique challenges, and it's because there are so many people in so many different places simultaneously. And so the service had asked the Trump White House to approve an extra $60 million into its roughly $2 billion initial budget. Doesn't seem like that's happened yet, but it could happen in the future. And it's not unfair for them to ask for that money, especially when you consider that Melania Trump is still in New York in Trump Tower with Barron, so they have to pay for the security there. You also have Trump's family members traveling to other countries at various times, and they have to make sure that they, you know, keep them safe. And then Donald Trump is constantly tweeting things that offend people that leads to death threats, and also traveling to Mar-a-Lago in a very predictable travel pattern. And so that has become a very unique challenge for the Secret Service here. Now, one former Secret Service agent said the following, the Twitter thing is creating a lot of hassles. It's generated a tidal wave of threats that Secret Service can't ignore. He also says it's an arithmetic impossibility to interview every single person who sends a threat. It's not possible, right? And so they have to somehow figure out which one of these threats should be taken seriously, which one of them is just the standard internet death threat. And that gets very difficult to decipher because you never know. Someone might be unhinged and might actually try to carry out some form of violence against Trump or one of his family members. And also, if you are a Secret Service agent investigating this, if you make a mistake and you misjudge something and someone gets hurt, well, it's on you. So it's a problem. And I don't know I know what the solution is. We just know that the behavior by Trump and his family members won't change. So I don't know what's going to happen with the Secret Service or their safety.
I think it's really interesting that never in the history of our public office have we ever had such an administration that lacks dignity, that that engages in social media the way that they do. Not that social media has been around that long, but when you think about, so when you think about the Trump sons who post pictures on Facebook with dead animals that they go hunt, and then you think about them running a commercial for Ivanka's clothing line while people in Flint don't have water. So you know why people are so hateful right now, and people really want to harm the people who seem to be gloating and seem to be, you know, just taking advantage of the people of the United States. So I understand that. But I also think we have so many other things to worry about that they need to tighten up that operation, because I think that the people need to be the priority in the country, not a family that wants to engage in privilege and live a lifestyle that they're living as if they were socialites in New York. This is a first family.
Yeah. It's hard to think of a life of more privilege than living in the White House, which is a castle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Designed explicitly to, like, be impressive, to shock and awe people when they show up and they say, oh my goodness, this is a giant, amazing house at the end of this giant, amazing national mall.
May I say take advantage of that? People will probably disagree with.
What?
I don't think that the White House looks that impressive.
Well, what side do you see it from?
I've seen it from all sides.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, all sides that are available to us. But look, yeah, it is cool. I'm not saying that it's like a shack or anything, but look, someone like Donald Trump, who has grown up in the lap of luxury, is not impressed by the White House. Let's keep it real, right? Yeah. So that's the reason why every chance he gets, he's flying to Mar-a-Lago, which, by the way, is hurting the local economy there and is also hurting us as a country of taxpayers who have to foot the bill for those constant weekly trips.
Right. We've seen that stat that he's in his first year going to outdo the spending on travel that Obama did in his entire administration.
Right. And look, it's always super annoying to me when people are like, the president, he's golfing, he's vacationing, he's doing this, he's doing that. It's just annoying because, yeah, he's the president, and sometimes, you know, you're super stressed out like every other human, and you need to, like, take your mind off of really important issues that are happening right now. I get that. But with Trump, it's like he has amplified it by so much. He has traveled to Mar-a-Lago way too many times, way too early on in his presidency. And it's just, it's frustrating because at the same time, you have people in his political party arguing that they're the fiscal conservatives, right? Criticizing Obama and the trips he took. What about your own president? What's happening right now?
Right, and the move is to say, listen, you are asking us to increase the budget on this by $60 million. Let's look at the places you've cut by $60
million. Places you'd like to cut. Yeah.
And places you'd like to cut, and compare how important those things are. Now, I get it, as if you are the Secret Service, it is your job to protect the president and everyone else that you've been assigned to protect. And, you know, I understand the president's instinct or anyone's instinct to say, like, well, it's your job, but come on, work with us here.
And the thing about us is, like, so many of us are connected to people that are poor and so many people that have to go work. These people have a distorted sense of reality because they're not connected. They're only connected to privilege and more privilege and more privilege. So they're so disconnected. While we need our basic needs, and people that go to work every day who are worried about their health care and taxes
and all that stuff, absolutely.
Then they gotta worry about, you know, and I'm all for Barron being safe because that baby is an innocent in this. But I'm like, I think it's just disgusting. Like,
it is.
Every day it's a different thing that we got to really swallow. Because at this point, we're just swallowing. And it is just, that's how it feels.
I just don't want Donald Trump to make me swallow anything.
All right. One other thing I wanted to add is the Secret Service is now thinking that maybe it makes sense to have permanent security at some of the locations that Trump is constantly traveling to. So let's go to graphic 16. That includes Mar-a-Lago. So just a permanent detail that stays there. Trump Tower and then Bedminster?
Yeah.
New Jersey, that's his private golf club, which he also travels to quite a bit.
That's where because the season in Mar-a-Lago is over. They're saying he will be heading to Bedminster now, which is closer. But I hope, just for many reasons, I hope that if we do assign a permanent Secret Service detail to Mar-a-Lago, they stay at the competing resort across the street. Like, don't do that, because A, we shouldn't be, you know, putting money into his pockets because of his security detail that's costing us money.
Yeah.
I just hope that we put it in, like, whatever, Mara Mara across the street, you know?
It's all very frustrating. All right, let's move on to some social news that I find interesting. New research shows that young women who are out-earning their male counterparts feel a little embarrassed or ashamed about it. Now, this is something that kind of strikes close to home because I've experienced so many friends who have, you know, tried to hide how much they make or tried to minimize their success just so they don't make people in their lives uncomfortable. Well, in 2015, and this is a pretty incredible stat, 38% of American wives actually made more money than their husbands. Now, for those of you who are like, you see that? See what the feminists are doing? It's important to keep in mind that just because they're making more money than their husbands doesn't mean that they're like swimming in cash. Right. The economic downturn in 2008, we're still feeling some of the ramifications of that. And so a lot of men lost their jobs and are still trying to find their way in the workspace, whereas women are usually working, you know, like mid-level jobs. You know, they're not like super wealthy and the guys are making nothing. So that's, Don't get that twisted. So what's interesting, though, is that Ashley Ford, who works for Refinery29, looked into this by talking to a bunch of millennial women just to hear what they think. And here's what she says. They feel anxious, even resentful. Unlike the traditional trajectory of men who earn more or are sole financial providers, most of these millennial women either believe out-earning their partners is temporary or lament the idea that it may not be. Ford summarized a University of Chicago Booth School of Business finding, saying that in their sample, dissatisfaction increased and could lead to divorce once a woman started to earn more than her husband. So there are some negative ramifications to it as well. And I have many hypotheses as to why, but I want you guys to kind of jump in.
Listen, if I'm pissed that I out-earned my fiance. Like, I'm angry because I want her to earn more than me, so I don't have to work as much. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I want that to happen.
That's because you're confident and you're not an insecure man.
Oh, yeah, no. I am also super lazy, so it would help me. I know that's not what we're talking about here. Yeah. I know that's not the issue. That's just my personal experience. Mm-hmm. I get it, because the norm is that, you know, when you watch Leave It to Beaver, the guy goes off and works and the woman stays at home. And it is weird. It feels weird to people, I think, because it is different from what they've seen.
I think that a lot, like society for a very long time has told men that the only worth or only value that they have is their earning potential, which I have never bought into. I think that's complete BS, absolutely, right? I think that there's so much more to a person. Forget gender for a second. There's way more to people than how much they earn, right? Mm-hmm. And so I remember having a conversation a long time ago, way before I met my husband, with one of my mom's friends. And I was telling her about my ambitions and what I wanted out of life and all this. And she's like, oh, you wanna live in this neighborhood and buy this kind of house? She's like, well, you're gonna have to marry a rich guy. You're not gonna be able to do it on your own, right? And so she's like, just stop wasting your time with these guys who aren't gonna be wealthy. And like that notion, that is part of the problem. That is why so many men will feel bad about themselves when they shouldn't, just because their partner's making more money than them.
Yeah, but right? I will say that like in a very super white suburban cul-de-sac where I lived, there was a moment where my neighbor pulled me aside and was like, just saying this kind of thing, like jokey thing. It was a, you know, you can marry more in a minute than you can make in a lifetime.
That's exactly true, but you also marry someone that you don't love just so you can.
Well, sometimes you find both.
Again.
Some rich person you can love, and maybe it's because they're super rich, but I love money, so by the transitive property, I can love someone who has money.
By the way, let me get this out of the way before we continue on. The resentful stuff that comes about isn't just for men. I don't want to just point it all on them. The women start to feel resentful as well. And so one of the reasons why is because, look, things are luckily evolving and changing when it comes to child rearing and taking care of household duties, but still a lot of households rely on the woman to do all that work. And so if the woman is earning all the money or the majority of the money, and then on top of that has all the responsibilities in the home, well, then you start to grow a little resentful. So women stated that as well during these interviews.
Because some men don't want to, they So I agree with you about the whole worth thing. I think also there was a period a few years ago where there was so much propaganda telling women that the more successful they would be, the more the potential for them to be alone. I remember Newsweek did an article, and even Essence magazine did an article that said, if you are a woman of color and you're over 30, you are probably, and you're not married, you probably will never get married.
Wow.
So the constant propaganda that's always being piled on women, there are so many things that we have to do. We have to overachieve. We have to be submissive to men. We don't want to bruise their egos. We have to take care of a home. We have to have a job. And now we can't make more than the guy because we don't want, those are the things that are always being told to women. And I'm not saying that men, that the general population of men are perpetuating this, but I do think that it is a constant theme of all of the things that women got to keep up with all the time. And I'll tell you, if millennial women are feeling this pressure, imagine the generation before them where it was unheard of a woman.
Oh, absolutely. You know? I love that you brought that up because, so my husband's Cuban. I don't know if you guys know this. I talk about it all the time. But, you know, in Cuban culture, much like other Latino cultures, there's this machismo thing going on, right? And I've experienced it with a lot of, you know, Latino guys. And with Christian, it's not a problem. But I definitely see it with some of his elders. And it's kind of incredible, right? Because it is a very old school way of thinking. And I think that guys in younger generations are not like that at all. I think that they realize, hey, you know what? We do need a dual income household with this current economic situation. It doesn't make sense anymore. You can't even have a single earner in the house. You need to have a dual income household at this point for the vast majority of people, unless you're like in Silicon Valley making the big bucks.
Yeah. Right. So this whole thing of like the woman, how she feels about making more than her husband, the tiptoeing around it would be kind of implies like, men are strong. Men need to feel strong, so don't hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
It's like, well, then you just said men have like feelings that can get hurt. It paints men both as strong and very weak at the same time.
I think more of men than that, right? I think that some guys might be insecure about it, right? But I have so much more faith in guys, and I have faith that they're not gonna have their egos bruised just because temporarily, maybe not temporarily, their partner might be making a little more money than they are. It's not the end of the world. Look, it's a partnership. That's the thing. You shouldn't think of a relationship as this competitive thing where you're competing against your partner, whether it's a man or a woman. Let me just say something. When you're in a long-term committed monogamous relationship and you're living together and you're planning on being together for the long haul, it doesn't matter who the hell is making the money. It feels good. When that direct deposit comes in, I don't care if it's from Christian, I don't care if it's from TYT, I'm happy because we're able to pay our bills, and that's all that matters.
I agree. I also think that you just made me think of 10 other things. But what I was going to say is while this is a great article, don't let that fool you into believing that women are making the amount of money that they should be making. Just because she's making more money than the person she's with doesn't mean she's making the money she's supposed to be making, because we're still not getting paid as much as men. And that's really what we need to be really focusing on, is that the fact that we get, 80 cents to a man's dollar?
Yeah, I have to look at the numbers again, because I'm being fair. Some of those numbers, especially from the government, I think it's the Government Accountability Office or... Anyway, one of those stats is just wrong, because it doesn't compare men and women who do the same job.
Right.
So if you compare men and women who do the same job, the pay gap actually shrinks considerably. It's still not equal, but it shrinks considerably.
Right.
The real problem, though, is the types of jobs that women are able to get and whether or not they get promoted, right? Yeah. And so if you look at higher level jobs, they're still dominated by male employees.
You mean like the White House? The president
that would be
of
an
the
example.
United States?
That would be an example. All right. We have time. We can do more than one story.
Wow.
Wow, that never happens. So let's move on.
Before you move, I'm just kidding.
All right. There is evidence indicating that more people are single now than ever before. And the likelihood of these people ever getting married is pretty low, right? Now, some people, conservatives to be specific, freak out about this. And they think, oh my God, the nuclear family, we gotta do whatever we can to protect it. We need to get people to get married, men and women. They need to have babies, Christian values. And if we don't do it, the morals of this country will just fall apart. But the reality is there's actually some upsides to living a single life. And so I want to get into that a little bit. Now, first of all, a stat that blew me away a little bit. By the time today's young adults reach the age of 50, about 1 in 4 of them will never marry, which I believe because you look at the stats or the surveys with millennials and their views on marriage and all that, and a lot of them say, or at least a sizable portion of them say, that they're not interested in ever getting married, that they enjoy the independence, they like having relationships, but they don't really see the need to get married. Now, CNBC covered this, and here's what one expert said. Wow, I'm pulling a Brett in hour two. Okay, there we go.
Shots fired.
All right, so this is actually not CNBC. This is Bella DiPaolo. She is a researcher from UCSB, and here's what she has to say about the situation. She says they're more likely than married couple to encourage, help, and socialize with their friends and neighbors. They're also more likely to visit, support, advise, and stay in touch with their siblings and parents. So she's comparing single adults to those who have gotten married. And she's saying, look, just because you're not married doesn't mean that you're gonna live a lonely life. In fact, you're way more likely to be social than married couples. And I totally agree with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel like you're dropping out of social circles?
But it feels so good.
Yeah, right? That's the thing.
Because she's who she likes.
Yeah, and I'm just like, but I don't want to go out. I just want to go home and see the person I love and, like, you know, be an introvert, be with my dog. But, like, there's a lot of downsides to doing that because your life becomes too dependent on the companionship of one person. You have to maintain your friendships. And I think a lot of people who do get married kind of drop off the face of the earth. And that's not good.
I blame George Clooney.
Why is that?
Because he made being single for so long so sexy. And I think that a lot of people, and
it's sexy for men.
I'm joking, but
right?
I think a lot, yes, I know a lot of guys that are like, I'm not getting married until like I'm 60. Even Jamie Foxx once said, I'm getting married when I'm 100. And I'm gonna die when I'm 104, and I'm gonna be married for the rest of my life. Like he was like that. It's this glamorization of being single and having Tinder and a beautiful women at your fingertip. And you
so I think that there is a double standard when it comes to that. Yeah. Like if a man says I am going to be a bachelor for as long as possible, like everyone is like.
Yeah,
high five. I got so many high fives when I say that.
Right.
And then bones, we do this. Good job.
Like but with women, like we talked about this in a previous story, like you're a woman in her 30s, you haven't gotten married yet, people start looking at you like, what's wrong with you, right? And so that double standard exists, but I think it is luckily changing a little bit.
Yeah.
But whether you're a man or a woman, there's no reason to feel sorry or bad about being single because there are benefits. Single people also volunteer more for social service organizations, educational groups, hospitals, and organizations devoted to the arts than people who are married.
Well, because people with kids and families are too busy getting their life sucked out of them by their offspring.
Yes, but I just want to say one thing because I'm not 30. So, I mean, I'm not 50 either, but I'm not 30. But
girl, you look good. That's all that matters.
I appreciate it. But what I will say is this, because I do engage in conversation with women that are my age and people my age and older. And one thing they always talk about is this younger generation of people that are lost. And what I think is a bunch of young people who are found, who really find themselves and know who they are and are able to say things like, I don't know if I want to get married. I don't know. I mean, you know, I make more money than my boyfriend. So besides all of this stuff, what I do want to say is that I celebrate young women that are able to do that because I come from a culture. I was raised by a Cuban man and a generation of women, and not my generation, but the generation before me and my mother, who really had to, you know, they always had to hide behind a man and they couldn't say, celebrate their wins like they wanted to because it would make the man feel uncomfortable. And this feminist and empowerment movement of young women, I'm really excited about it. I think that to hear a young woman say to me, I don't know if I want to have children. I don't know if I want to get married. I don't think what's wrong with her. I think, damn, she really knows herself. I wish that would have been my friend when I was a teenager. So kudos to the young girls out there.
I agree.
And I have friends who have not gotten married for a long, who are still not married, who are not even close to getting married. And I have other friends that got married early, and it's just a different experience. Like, the experience that I've seen in the healthy relationships of people who got married early is they're just discovering everything together.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be a fully formed person when you're 23.
Absolutely.
These folks got married at that point, and they continued to develop in a healthy relationship together, looking at stuff kind of through the, you know, with different exact perspectives, but generally together. And there's others who shouldn't have gotten married. They should have done what they did, which is stay single for a longer amount of time so they could figure out who they are and fully be able to look around through their own eyes, as opposed to what society kind of tells you you have to do, and then adequately choose who they should be with. And they made good choices.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of describing it. And also, I think for women specifically, there was this, for a long time, we would always hear that line, like, you can do it all, women can do it all, you can work and raise kids and be married and all that. And I think women, some women, not all, and some women can do it all, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say, quite honestly, from my perspective, I don't think I can do it all.
Well, I think we need to redefine what your all is.
Right.
Because I think that belief that being able to do it all is me, being a mom, and that may not be what your definite, because I think you're doing it all, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you depends on who you're having a conversation with. If you're talking to my mom, I'm not doing it all. Like, where's the baby, right?
Right.
But it kind of.
Where is the baby?
I don't know if the baby's ever going to happen.
Oh, crap.
And like, I know.
What are we here for?
I had the babies, and I'm like, go, girl.
and the thing is, okay, so I like my life, and I like my career.
Fine.
And so, moral of the story, doesn't matter if you're single, doesn't matter if you're married, doesn't matter if you have kids or don't have kids, you have to do what makes you feel comfortable. Because as soon as you let your family or society pressure you into doing what they think you should do, you're going to make a decision that's not going to make you happy.
Yeah.
Right?
I have friends who got married and decided, we're not going to have kids for a while. We're just going to be happy. And then after that, we'll have a kid. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, wait, did we just say we'll only have kids when we're not happy anymore? So they,
which is also not
but good. But it was a good development. They got to the point where they're like, "This, I don't see this happiness stopping, but I definitely don't want to wait until it does to have kids. Yeah. This is the time." So they were able to.
Well, I'm the mother of a daughter, and I make her look at people that are like you, and I said, because she's like, "What if I don't want to have kids?" I said, "That's absolutely fine." The only thing that I've ever poured into my daughter, because I tell her, don't get caught up in those magazine articles that tell you there's something wrong with you if you don't want to get married. The only thing I will encourage people to tell their daughters is that they're intelligent and that they are highly intelligent, because that will never go away. All that superficial stuff will fade. So that's all I've ever said. Here, read this article about how smart you are. And then you can make your choices.
Yeah.
You know, make your own choices.
And I will leave you with one final bit on this story that I think was really interesting, just comparing single people to married people. Studies have shown that people who stay single develop more confidence in their own opinions and undergo more personal growth and development than people who marry. They value meaningful work more than married people do. They may also have more opportunities to enjoy the solitude that many of them savor. Oh, solitude is really, really nice, I will say.
That's it. I'm never getting married again.
All right, guys, thank you so much for watching. Brett Ehrlich will stick around for a members-only postgame if you unfortunately cannot watch because you're not a member. The fortunate thing is you can become a member by going to tytnetwork.com/join. Please join. Please help us keep this show going. It's because of our members that TYT is able to do what it does. Ida Rodriguez, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Keep my daughter in college. Buy my album. It's on iTunes.
What's your album called?
It's called I'll Say It For You. And he heard it. He liked it. A man said, you're funny. So,
and then he laughed at that. That's good.
All right, guys. Thank you for watching. Brett will stick around for members. And for everyone else, have a good night. Bye. Bye-bye.